During his 3 years as a deacon, Father Nicholas accompanied the new Bishop of Riga, Augustine, on two trips, one to Estonian Finland and another to eastern Latvia, and to the city of Dvinsk. Father Nicholas explains his providential meeting with George Bennigsen during the second trip. During the trip, the Metropolitan told me that he wanted to ordain me as a priest because I had been a deacon already for 3 years, and he needed a priest in Riga. But I had to find someone to replace me as deacon, someone who knew Latvian. During the vigil service, I heard someone in the balcony where the choir was singing one very nice voice. I was deacon, and Father John Ljochki was priest. Father John was a young priest at that time and was still at the cathedral. I asked him, who's reading? He said, Jura Bennigsen. He's in his last year at the gymnasium, but he likes to be in church. He even participated in the Orthodox student movement from Paris. And then he says, it is interesting because the priest, Father John Ljochki, and I worked together after that. So along with Father George, Father John, is a contemporary of Father Nicholas. I believe he ended up in New Jersey, Father John Ljochki, born just a day before him, Father Nicholas. So we have three priests born 3 days in a row in Latvia. And it turned out that Father George Bennigsen was indeed ordained a deacon in Riga. Father Nicholas was ordained a priest, and Father John and Father Nicholas served together at the Trinity St. Church St. Sergius Convent in Riga. Father John taught religion in the school, or Father Nicholas taught religion in the schools and started a mission parish in Riga that met at a cemetery church. While at the convent, the stories of World War II begin to unfold. Father Nicholas marks the first Soviet occupation of Latvia by the church calendar. He said they invaded and occupied the city on the second day of Pentecost in June 1940 and left on the Sunday of All Saints of Russia in June 1941, so basically a year. The church leadership passed from Metropolitan Augustine, who went into retirement, to a young metropolitan from Moscow, Sergei Voskresensky. And I have some pictures back there that were given to me in Poland of this metropolitan, who figures very much in the story of these priests. This metropolitan replaced Metropolitan Eleftheri of Vilna, who had passed away. About Metropolitan Sergei, Father George had the following to say. Quite a few people suspected him of collaboration. I wouldn't exclude the possibility that there were some contacts, because if you were living in the totalitarian state, unless you go to the secret police come to you. Gradually, he started winning his influence within the church, and he was greatly liked. One of the reasons was because of his liturgical activities. We had an akathist every Tuesday and every Thursday in Riga, every Tuesday in a parish, every Thursday in the cathedral. Attendance was huge, and he would always serve himself. He really became the church. He was the head of the church. There was no doubt about it. And now I present two impressions of the first Soviet occupation of Latvia. One, first from Father George. These are brief. Especially during the Soviet occupation, spiritual life and church life were flourishing. Although people were disappearing and sent to concentration camps and arrested, every day you would find out about somebody else who had disappeared. At the same time, the response of church life was really impressive. And the other impression is from the eyes of Father Nicholas as he kept up his publishing work, even though it was very dangerous. He explained that while the first year of the occupation was not as severe as later, still everyone was afraid. Churches were allowed to remain open. However, there were incidents of terror. Very good people were arrested, he said. There was one man who was not a priest, but very devout. He came to the church over the river every Saturday night and every Sunday. He came from the monastery. He worked as an engineer in the city hall and was very devoted to the church. He was arrested. Why? No one knows. He was not a politician. He just disagreed with the Soviets. It was a great terror, but it seems that they didn't want to start too great of a terror just when they occupied. They wanted to show that they befriended you, that they freed you from your government. When asked whether he published that year, Father Nicholas shared this memory. Of course I wasn't supposed to. I should have given everything back, destroyed the printing and so on, but I still published. Even that last night, June 13th, 1941, the war started on June 21st. 1 week before that they started to take whole families and put them in trains. Men in one train, women in another, and children in another train. And these trains, he explained, were heading to the camps in the Soviet Union. And the Soviet forces were conducting these activities just ahead of the occupation by the Germans. So on their retreat, they sensed, this was a week before the retreat, they sensed that there was an oncoming invasion, and they stepped up this activity. And now a rather unusual event occurred, in that this Metropolitan Sergei, who had been appointed by the Patriarchate of Moscow to oversee the churches as Exarch of the Baltic States, made a personal decision that charted the course of church history. When the Soviet army retreated, and when he himself was asked by government functionaries to return as a citizen, Metropolitan Sergei hid in the basement of the cathedral in Riga, awaiting the departure of the army from Riga. Father George and others were with him. Father Nicholas explains his thoughts on why he hid himself. He knew that if he went back to Russia, the communists would accuse him of cooperation with the capitalists. He was very smart. And so he hid in the cathedral basement. And when the Germans occupied, he came out. The Germans arrested him for a while and asked him different questions, but they allowed him to stay in Riga and even to be head of the church. This was remarkable, given that the Metropolitan never broke allegiance with the Moscow Patriarchate. And as we will see, he had in mind the good of the church and not only his own self-interest. Father George explains the mood in Riga at the arrival of the Germans. We opened the cathedral on the day of the occupation, and I sold 1 year's supply of candles in 1 day. It was July 1st, and everybody sang Christos Voskresi. It was a real Easter. No one really gave thought to what was going to happen next. The important thing was that the diabolical thing that had happened to us for one whole year was finally over. And so the Germans were treated as liberators at the beginning. For the purpose of our story, events unfolded rapidly. During his detainment by the Germans, Metropolitan Sergei somehow secured the permission of the authorities to send clergy into the newly occupied territories east of Latvia and Estonia. And now we pick up Father Alexei's comments explaining the situation in Western Russia that had been occupied by the Germans. The vast region, he says, from the Siversky station just south of Petrograd, which is the pre-revolutionary name for Leningrad, to Opochka, had some time ago been cleared of churches and religious life by the Soviet power. The churches, which at one time had been beautiful, were destroyed, defiled, turned into warehouses, factories, dance clubs, movie theaters, and museums. The repressed clergy, basically en masse, had perished in the concentration camps in Siberia. The two or three priests who had survived under the Soviets were terrorized, weary in soul, and unprepared, and in no way could take on themselves the labor of organizing church life for several hundred thousand people. But the spiritual famine, the thirst for the church's prayer, mysteries, and preaching could be keenly sensed in these places. On July 1st, 1940, Latvia was occupied by the Germans, and from Latvia, Metropolitan Sergei quickly organized a group of 15 priests, many of them young priests, to travel by bus to the city of Pskov, which is just over the border from the eastern border with Russia and Latvia. By August 19th, which is a matter of weeks, the old calendar Feast of Transfiguration, this group of priests had arrived in the ancient city. Father Alexei describes the scene. We arrived in Pskov on the evening of August 18th, 1941, the eve of the Feast of the Transfiguration. In the Trinity Cathedral, the service had just finished. It had been performed by the Archpriest S.E. He often just gave the initials. This was Sergei Efimov, identified by Father George as the first head of the mission. And he continues, who had come from Latvia a week earlier than us. The people who had filled to overflowing the vast church were silently coming to the Ambon, to the elevated area in front of the iconostasis in the church that was already completely dark inside because all the candles had been blown out by gusts of wind coming through the broken windows of the cathedral. They were finishing the anointing with the holy oil. Normally, the anointing takes place in the middle of the all-night vigil, but here there were so many people that this rite was continuing even after the end of the service, and it's a lengthy service. On the next day, all of us missionaries took part in the Festal Divine Liturgy. Again, a throng of many thousands filled the Holy Trinity Cathedral, but now it was all radiant with sunlight. Of the three priests featured in a book that I prepare with the transcripts of the oral histories, as well as Father Alexei's, a translation of Father Alexei's memories, Father Alexei spent just a week in Pskov before heading to the outlying areas to begin his work of service to the faithful. Father George remained in Pskov, and Father Nicholas remained in Riga, assisting the Metropolitan and the Pskov mission in whatever ways he needed were needed and possible. Father John Milki, whose name came up earlier, who had served with Father Nicholas in Riga, joined the mission as well. And in his absence, Father Nicholas became the rector of the women's monastery in Riga. I want to emphasize that these were young priests, ordained just a few years before these events took place. But the connection with Russia and the faith of the local populations in the German-occupied territory was huge, in that many of those who joined the mission were of Russian descent. Before describing some of the work of the mission itself, it is important to mention the Russian prisoners of war. Father George describes one location where they were kept. At the beginning of the German advance, the Red Army soldiers and officers went to the German side in millions. There were so many of them that the Germans were not able to escort them. They even used planes to get them onto our sides of the front line. In Riga, we had a military camp, which under normal conditions would house about 5,000 Latvian soldiers. It was not a Latvian camp anymore under German occupation. Rather, it was a camp for 45,000 Soviet POWs. Once we got permission to serve there, there was a group of us from the cathedral who sang, and Father Kirill Zaitz celebrated the liturgy. There was a makeshift altar, everything necessary. We sang, there was a sea of faces. Faces not alive, those that show you in photographs from some Jewish concentration camps, emaciated, hungry, almost inhuman faces. They were pushing to us small pieces of paper with the names of their relatives for us to pray for. There was a kind of commotion, not without some fighting going on, because the German guards were killing those prisoners of war who tried to escape. In the meantime, during the liturgy, when the time for communion came, for the first time in my life and forever, I understood that this is really bread, because they came to communion not only for spiritual hunger, but also for physical hunger. And whatever particles were left on the discos while Father Kirill Zaitz was giving communion, we were all standing with our backs to the altar table. All small particles, crumbs of bread, were stolen from the discos by these men. This is a scene of very, difficult times. Father Alexei relates a few stories or impressions from the week he spent in Pskov, including on the third day after arrival being rounded up with other men in the city at 5 a.m. by German soldiers in retaliation for some shooting of soldiers at night that had taken place. The missionaries were let go with an apology, but the others were not as fortunate and were taken to a prison near the Monastery of the Caves in Pskov. Father Alexei describes leaving Pskov and arriving in the little town of K. He always uses acronyms or initials. On the way, he journeyed with a very old priest who was returning home, having been saved by a miracle from being shot when the Bolsheviks retreated from Latvia. This priest described how other priests had been treated during their interrogations, roughly treated. He continues with a description of the landscape. We continue along. There's nobody on the road. In the collective farms on the side of the road, one does not observe much activity. On many of the roofs, there is no straw. The cattle ate it even before the war. Poverty can be seen everywhere. The roads are in extreme disrepair, and in some places are completely destroyed. Later on, the Germans would begin to repair the roads. In the cruel winter of 1940 and 41 and 42, and throughout the following year, Russian prisoners of war would repair them. The dark spots in the snow, these frozen corpses, and those terrifying willows waving their branches wildly in the snowstorm, even now stand before my eyes. About 10 kilometers from the village of K, we met two women dressed in village clothes and dark scarves. This makes them look like nuns. They bow deeply to us like nuns and ask, "Where are you going, Batushka?" "We're going to K." "Really?" We answer, "Yes, yes." "Lord, what a grace. And we are going to Pskov to get a priest for Dormition." I tell them firmly, "Return, we're coming with you." "Oh, what a joy," the rejoicing women whisper. "The Lord himself sent us Batushkas, fathers." I will never forget these simple, he continues, believing Russian women, how much desire they had and how resolute they were to arrange the feast, to pray as was fitting. So with a piece of bread in their knapsack, they went by foot, without documents, without money. They are going to Pskov, because there they heard a lot of batushkas were brought. Later on, I got to know them better. S was a woman of middle age, unmarried, renowned for her ability to work, had golden hands, and was half a nun. She does everything for the sake of the church. At night, she will not sleep in the order to get the vestments ready for the feast. For her, it was as if there had never been the Bolsheviks in Russia. Immediately, she is completely immersed in church affairs, in church work, in church obediences.